Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Is she? Oh, we have her. We're sure.
Yeah. How about? Yeah. Okay, you can hear.
Blacktopia, to the perfect world. Blacktopia, yes, you will always be my girl. Blacktopia, women of the world, we must unite. Blacktopia, yes, you will always win this fight. Blacktopia, yeah, oh, Blacktopia, yeah, oh, Blacktopia.
Wondering about COVID-19, this whole epidemic, pandemic. They're wondering what's going on. Will I be safe? Will I contract the disease? All different types of questions. And us in the Black community, we raise a lot of questions because we distrust the information and where it comes from. But today, you guys, I'm so happy to let you guys know that we have an epidemiologist that's going to join us, and she's going to answer any questions that anybody has about COVID-19, the COVID vaccination, anything. She's an open book, and she's here for us on the Sister Code. So if you guys are listening, please join us live. I'm going to play a little clip just to get you guys caught up on what we're going to be talking about today, and she will join us from there. So let me get this going for you guys. I'm so happy. You guys don't know. I'm very, very happy. And also when we come back, I will also introduce our host for today. Here we go.
One of the major hurdles facing the coronavirus vaccine, getting people to take it. This issue of trust is especially deep in the Black and Latino communities. Even though they are being hit disproportionately hard by the pandemic, mistrust of the government and of the medical community may make some people reluctant to trust the safety of the vaccine. ABC's Zachary Keesh has more.
Overcoming systematic racism and collective trauma will be key components in the effort to vaccinate. Now there's a full-fledged PR campaign.
All right, seems like that one doesn't want to work, so we'll move on to the next one. Sorry about that.
Life during COVID feels like we've pressed pause. And it won't start again.
Until we have a safe and effective vaccine.
That is safe and effective.
But even when that time comes, many people won't take it.
I have plans not to get a COVID vaccine.
You can't buy a good immune system.
I would never put a vaccine into my body.
Period. Here are three people who share different perspectives. Some say they're anti-vax. Others are just skeptical. Take Holly Bate. She owns a holistic healing practice in Marin. Her reasoning is personal.
Both of my children had vaccine damage, and it wasn't necessarily that they died on the spot, but they both had clear changes in their health.
Then there's Joseph Jax. Tell me why you're concerned.
Six words. Testing, 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 and more testing. It's important if you're going to put something into your body that it's absolutely and totally tested.
And is it higher?
And if you ask Dana Ullman, he says he's not anti-vax, but concerned pharmaceutical companies are putting speed over safety.
I'm not anti-vaccine.
But when they're doing studies now where they're not testing it against a real placebo, it's a way of hiding what safety is involved.
50% of Americans say they won't get a COVID vaccine, even if it was affordable and widely available, according to an AP poll taken in late May. And 7 out of 10 worry about safety.
I think before I would put my own endorsement on a vaccine or vaccines for COVID, I'd want to see the data too. I totally agree with them.
Stanford pediatrician Dr. Yvonne Maldonado specializes in infectious diseases. She's currently working with the CDC on potential COVID vaccines and participating in
Operation Warp Speed. That means big and it means fast.
The federal initiative aims to deliver 300 million doses of a safe and effective COVID vaccine by January next year.
We are in a hurry, but we're not in that much of a hurry that we want to make a big mistake. We need to understand why people say they might not want a vaccine.
To give you an idea, 150 of the largest anti-vaccine groups on social media and YouTube have gained 8 million followers since late March. There are at least 400 anti-vax groups that have 55 million followers worldwide. That's according to an international nonprofit tracking those accounts.
Do you think the anti-vax movement will impact how fast we get to herd immunity?
I don't think we're going to get there very quickly. There's no way we're going to stop transmission as at a global level, meaning all around the country or the world, unless 60 to 70 or 80% of people have permanent or long-lasting immunity.
Now, Dr. Maldonado says it may take 2 years to get to herd immunity worldwide, assuming the vaccine is at least 70 to 75% effective. Stephanie Sierra, ABC 7 News.
Stephanie, what's the closest comparison to a coronavirus vaccine that already exists, and how long did it take to develop?
Well, Amma, studies show the closest comparison is the MMR vaccine, which took start to finish 4 years to develop, not under a year like what scientists are aiming for now with the COVID vaccine.
Wow. All right. Now that I got that on your guys' mind, we're going to go ahead and do a quick introduction because we do have a guest in the house today. So Randon is our host for the week. So, like I told you guys, we have a special guest that will be joining us tonight, and she is an epidemiologist. And so let me give her a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful introduction. Rhonda will do the introduction.
Yay. But she's also a very dear friend of mine and a very cool human being. To give us her time when she's here visiting her children. So I appreciate that. And just a little bit about Katrina. First of all, she is a Harvard Medical School graduate, so they don't graduate any dummies there. She went to Massachusetts General Hospital for her internship and her residency, and her Boston career has been focused on vaccines. She worked as an epidemiologist at the CDC, and she started off as a disease detective, which just sounds super cool, in the Epidemic Intelligence Service, working on a lot of outbreaks. She's been a staff member domestically and globally for most of her career in the U.S. A lot of her policy work has been for pertussis and polio, as well as working on the HIV vaccine in clinical trials. Globally, she's mostly working on improving vaccine equity in polio, measles, and rubella. And she's assuring vaccine access for all and preventing and responding to outbreaks, most recently, of course, our favorite, COVID-19. The Genesis concert in 1986. For that, it's not on her CV, but it is. I'm forever grateful for that, Katrina. So anyway, welcome to our show. Maybe we can unmute you and say hello to you.
All right.
How are you, Atlanta?
There we go. Before it went.
Hey, Katrina, how are you doing?
Hi, hello. Thank you so much for inviting me to the show. Please let me know if you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay, fantastic. It's really such a privilege and such an honor to join you. So, yes, please. Let me know if you have any specific questions.
We have some questions.
So, would you like to start off with the first question, Rhonda?
No, I don't know what they are.
Oh, okay, well,
I don't know what they are.
All right, so Katrina, one of the first questions that we had come up is some want to know what are the major side effects of the vaccine and why is it that some communities have a stronger reaction than others?
So it's interesting. I really don't know myself at this point. Just to talk about the last part of the question, whether there's a difference in kind of adverse events, adverse effects in different communities for the COVID-19 vaccine. The side effects that are seen with the vaccine are mostly short, time limited, and local. That means, you know, you have some soreness and redness around the site where you're injected, and that can last for a day or two. Some people have things that are a little more systemic. They might last for 2 or 3 days, particularly after the second shot, once your immune system has kind of really has something to react to now. And it may be like kind of feeling blah, having malaise, having not feeling well for a day or two, but nothing in the realm of what it was like to actually have the COVID disease. And then one of the things that's been in the news are very, very rare instances of having the so-called thrombocytopenic thrombolic events, which is a fancy way of saying having clots. And those are exceedingly rare, but they've been associated with one of the kinds of the vaccines, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and then with another vaccine, which isn't even available in the United States. But those are very, very rare, and actually the rate of those events is much lower than it following the vaccine than it would be from having the actual disease. You get these blood clots more frequently as a consequence of having the disease than you do from getting the vaccine. So I hope that answers the question, and please let me know if you can hear me clearly.
We can hear you great.
Okay, fantastic.
So the next question that we do have is someone asked, how can we take better care of our immune system so we're not as susceptible to COVID?
So that's an interesting question. There really isn't so much that you can do to take care of your immune system per se, except the usual things about staying healthy and, you know, taking care of yourself, not getting run down, getting good sleep, good nutrition. But those by themselves are more likely to make your clinical course perhaps less bad. I don't think that they're necessarily correlated with the risk of getting the disease itself. You know that there's some conditions, some of which are not really preventable, that are associated with having a worse course, clinical course with COVID. For example, individuals who are older, particularly from the age of around 55 or 60, and then increasingly so, have a much worse course. But you can't change that.
Right.
People who smoke tend to have a worse course. That's something that can be changed. And there's a number of like other kinds of diseases or actually, unfortunately, being overweight, which are associated with having a worse course.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really changing your immune system. It's more just what is associated with having a worse clinical course. So I hope that answers the question.
This isn't working. Being healthy just doesn't mean you're not going to get COVID, no matter what.
Exactly. So even people who are perfectly healthy can get infected with COVID. And mm-hmm. some of them will have, you know, a very mild course of disease, or they won't really even know that they're infected, particularly if they're young. And that's why you see a lot of young people thinking that they're not in any danger. And
right.
then, but they it doesn't mean they don't get the disease or they don't get infected. It just means that possibly the clinical manifestations aren't
mm-hmm.
as bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I should
mm-hmm.
say, for the young people who do get ill, that there's no demonstration that they cannot pass it on to other people. And I'm talking
mm-hmm.
for teenagers and young adults. There's some
mm-hmm.
evidence that children tend not to pass it on as much as adults do, younger children.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Was that to me?
Oh, yeah. No, I was just thinking, aren't there now some more incidences of young people, of COVID in young people now than there used to be? Maybe it's a different strain or?
Yes. That's a really great question. So there are a number of different variants, and the ones that we particularly track are called variants of concern. And they all have like technical labels and numbers associated with them. But for shorthand, we just often refer to them by the countries where they originated. There's
uh-huh.
one that originated in the United Kingdom, the UK strain. There's one that originated in South Africa. There's one that originated in Brazil, just meaning that when they did the typing, that's the first country that was associated with it. Now these strains
mm-hmm.
have spread quite a bit, these variants. And right now in India, there's a so-called double mutant, which is really proving to be very formidable. And one of the features of many of these strains, particularly the one in South Africa, the one in the United Kingdom and the one in India, is that they spread much more rapidly and much more effectively.
Great.
So that means that
right.
young people are more likely to get it than they might otherwise have been. Yeah.
And the India, that's close to you because you studied in India for a while. You lived there, didn't you?
I did, actually. That's so funny. Rhonda must have told you that. Yeah, I did. I did study in India a little bit when I was in medical school. So it is near and dear to my heart, and it's really heartbreaking. I have many very close friends who live in India, and some of the reports of what's happening there are absolutely heartbreaking because they have a strain there which is not only much more infectious, but it also produces more concerning clinical consequences. And they cannot keep up with the total number of persons who are really ill. They don't have enough hospital beds. They don't have enough oxygen in the hospitals. They don't have enough ways actually to dispose of the bodies of the people who are dying, which is absolutely tragic. And it really speaks to the need to make the vaccine accessible as quickly as possible. And I'm actually now at the World Health Organization, and we're doing everything we can possibly to make the vaccine available not only in the United States, but also to all of our member states, other countries in the world where they might not be able to afford it, to prevent exactly what's happening in India. I think it may be, you know, unfortunately,
right.
Epidemic got ahead of the vaccine in India, which is so unfortunate. But, you know, we're hoping that we can have enough vaccine production to distribute it more broadly.
So they did not have the vaccine when they got this new wave, tidal wave?
They didn't have enough vaccine because remember, there's like 1.3 billion people who live in India, actually even more than that now. And even though actually India has some of the world's highest capacity for vaccine production. A lot of the vaccines which are used globally are actually produced in India. Even with that capacity, there's so many people there that they just didn't have enough.
They don't have enough for their own people. Wow.
That is awful. That is
It's very sad. Please go ahead, Cicely.
So what happened in Italy then in the beginning of the pandemic?
So, yes, that was actually before we really understood the dire nature, and it was such a kind of scary wake-up call for all of us to understand the potential of this virus. And I think a lot of what happened in Italy, so there before people really understood what was going on and were not taking precautions with the virus, you know, it originated in China and it spread, and it spread before anyone really was aware that it spread. And in Italy, it just took hold. There was a number of individuals who came who were in that area and who've been infected. And one of the things they did after they noted that there was an increase in cases, because everybody globally was trying to monitor, this was happened by March last year, more than a year ago, is that they kept the children home from school, but the parents continued to work. And so the grandparents, who were the ones who were the most susceptible, were constantly in contact with the children because they weren't going out. And just because of this, the family structure in Italy, that's one of the reasons why there were so many deaths in northern Italy early on in the epidemic. And that was another situation which was really tragic, where there weren't enough hospital beds. There weren't enough breathing machines, respirators. And they really had to be quite strict and not allow people to go out in order to control that. And it was really hard for the population.
And that's really what showed the world how awful COVID was and how terrifying it is to run out of beds and have to make and be medical personnel having to make a decision on who lives and who dies, who gets the last ventilator.
It is the worst thing I could possibly imagine. I've spent so much time working in intensive care units, and having that sort of responsibility is almost impossible to conceive of. And you know, early in the pandemic in the United States and elsewhere, there was so much concern about the capacity within those ICUs, intensive care units, and the number of respirators that I'm sure you remember, you know, flatten the curve. Everyone was talking about flattening the curve.
Just
means, you know, we want to make sure that our capacity to take care of the people who become critically ill stays ahead of that number, because that didn't happen in Italy, which was, as you said, the wake-up call, and it was very scary for all of us. And it's exactly what we're seeing in India now, too, which also is heartbreaking.
Yeah, well, in India, I don't even know how you contain a pandemic in a population of that size. I mean, and they're all in such, like, Bombay and Mumbai, and I mean, people are in close quarters, like in China, you know?
It's exactly the problem. Yeah, I mean, even in the United States, even in our big cities, there's still relatively large amount of space between one person and the next. But in some of these mega cities, people, it's really hard to stay confined and to not become going to get in contact with everyone else. And particularly when you're talking about settings where you have ghettos and slums and people living in really marginal conditions, they live their lives outside on the street. I mean, you cannot be inside the whole time. It's very hard to control.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the situation in India, there was a number of large gatherings. There's this big religious gathering on the Ganges River, the Kumbh Mela, which took place, and there's a number of big political rallies as well, like hundreds of thousands of individuals together, which undoubtedly contributed.
See, yeah, undoubtedly, you know, and I don't know, are they wearing masks in other countries? I mean, you live in Switzerland, you know, are they wearing masks in other countries? Is India wearing masks?
So I actually don't know about India. I assume they are. Virtually every country in the world uses masks. Virtually mm-hmm. every single country. I mean, I can't say with certainty. Wearing is a little bit individual in some parts of the United States, but for the most part, people in the United States still wear masks, and rightly so, until mm-hmm. we have enough people vaccinated that we're not at risk of infecting other mm-hmm. people unintentionally. But most countries
right.
in the world do use masks. And they
right.
do have different kinds of lockdowns that are still in place.
Oh, is there any real medical reason not to use a mask?
No. No. That one's easy.
So.
Really, no.
Yeah. Because, you know, the fact that it's my freedom is probably not a reason not to wear a mask.
Yeah, that's more of a philosophical question. It's not a medical question, but I actually would think.
and I kind of feel like it's my right also not to catch your COVID. So your rights end where you step on my rights.
But hey, what about those that are afraid of the vaccine,
mm-hmm.
especially being what I was saying previously before, being that we're afraid of the information and where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
What about us? Because so many of us have been given so much misinformation that we find it hard to trust now, or the information that we were given were to oppress us. And so now when we think about it and you want us to listen to you now, so
mm-hmm.
what about us that are afraid to trust the information that they're giving at this point because of what happened in the past?
So you're saying
that. I'm saying just period in general. So like take the whole COVID situation. A lot of people looked at the COVID situation as, okay, this is something that the government put together, or hey, this is not as serious as they are making it to be. So they choose not to wear the mask. And the reason why they feel like it's not as serious as they make it out to be is because the information that they were given in the past did not add up. And so now, why should I trust you now? Do you feel like those people are stepping on your rights?
I do, because I feel like if it makes me more comfortable than you wear a mask, then it's just a nice thing for you to do as a human to make me feel better.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So in the beginning, in March,
mm-hmm.
in March, you know, my husband and I were like, you know what, we're healthy. We're healthy. What's the COVID? It's no worse than the flu. No big deal, right?
Right.
Yeah. We're like, everything's going to be fine, right? And then I came home from a function, and Mike was reading an article written by an Italian doctor, and this is in March,
mm-hmm.
right before we had locked up here. We were locked down March 18th of last year. So this was like the
mm-hmm.
week before we got locked down. And he read an article from an Italian doctor, and it was kind of like, you could carry this and not know it. So if I'm carrying it and not knowing it, and I'm taking no precautions, I have no mask, I have nothing, I go to the grocery store, and I have COVID, and I breathe on somebody's grandmother, and I kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. We decided at that point, it is not about us. So if we wear a mask, whether it works or not, you know, maybe it doesn't even work, you know, right? I mean, who's to even say? But if there's a chance that it does, and I not only make the grandma in line next to me at the grocery store feel better, but maybe it does do something to prevent her from getting ill and, God forbid, dying. You know what? It's a few ounces on my face, and then I don't have to wear makeup when I go to the grocery store. So it's a win-win situation.
Right.
So
maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. But we're just going to do it anyway.
Right.
Brandy, that's exactly what we have decided. That, you know, it's just a time thing to do. And right now, to this day, I'm nervous. If I'm out in public, and I don't know where you've
Right.
And you're standing next to me, breathing on me, and I don't know where you've been. And you might be infected. I don't want COVID. Just don't.
Okay.
I don't want blood clots. I don't want respiratory issues. I don't want scarring in my lungs. I mean, Katrina, what can COVID do to a body?
That's a good question.
What can COVID do?
Oh, my goodness. COVID can do so much. I mean, first of all, as you know, particularly as people are older, they have other kinds of illnesses, or they may have risks. Like I mentioned this before, like being overweight, smoking to some extent, you know, then the risk of death increases dramatically for those individuals. But even for individuals who aren't who don't pass away, it can cause quite serious breathing difficulties and make people become dependent on a ventilator, which is why I was mentioning earlier that there were issues with not having enough ventilators in these hospitals in Italy, which is one of the big concerns that we had. And then there's all kinds of systemic problems that go along with having COVID as well. In addition to which, even if you recover, and most of the symptoms actually are pulmonary, meaning they mostly have to do with your breathing, but then there's all kinds of other random side effects as well, including, as I mentioned earlier, there's a risk of getting blood clots associated with the illness with COVID. But then in addition to that, there's this risk of having a really long-term progression, and you don't know what's going to happen 5 years or 10 years out because it's a new disease, which we haven't seen before. And so what the long-term consequences of having had it, so this long COVID, really we don't know yet, but you know, there's a significant proportion of individuals who get COVID, they seem to recover, but then they still have like brain fog, fatigue, inability to function normally for months and months and months afterwards. So it's really quite serious. And even though younger people sometimes seem to get infected and not have a lot of symptoms, which is great for them, they can still pass it to other people. And then particularly older individuals can become really, really, really sick. And even younger individuals, increasingly so, I think that you was one of the questions you asked mm-hmm. earlier, can become really dangerously ill as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Katrina, I have a question. So I did hear you speak about the vaccine, speak about COVID and the after effects of the COVID, what are the effects it can have on your body? And you were stating that you guys really don't know right now the long-term effects. And I wanted to know, would that be the same in regards to the vaccine? You don't know the long-term effects of the vaccine, and especially in pregnant women?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. I mean, I think we have to be very clear and candid about what we do know and what we don't know about the vaccines. So in order to be licensed, even in this emergency use authorization, which is what all the vaccines are listed as now, they have to do this phase 3 trial where they actually weren't blinded this time, so they didn't have a placebo like the gentleman mentioned, but they were testing either vaccine or no vaccine and then seeing the likelihood of getting severe COVID, being hospitalized or dying from COVID. So that's a requirement. But they don't have to, for this emergency use testing, they don't have to follow it out for, you know, months and years, which is sort of more typically the requirement for when having that kind of data for when a vaccine is actually licensed. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, you mentioned, or maybe the one of the speakers early on, that this was a very fast process. And yes, it was, but I can assure you that going through phases 1, 2, and 3 of the clinical trials, which is standard, were done scrupulously to standard. So that I'm very sure about. For all of the, there's three vaccines which are licensed in the United States, and all three of those followed this protocol, which is extraordinarily stringent, very, very, very carefully. But what you say is absolutely true, is that, you know, that you can't hurry time. I mean, if you're worried about what might be an effect, you know, 20, 30 years from now, 1 year, it's really quite difficult to do that without waiting for that length of time. And I will say, I'm sorry?
Which vaccine did you take?
I took the Pfizer vaccine, and I had a good course. I didn't have any side effects from it, so I was very happy. But, you know, they do make you wait for 15 minutes after you receive the vaccine in case there's some kind of, you know, severe allergic and anaphylactic reaction. So I had a good experience with it. I don't think that there's going to be a long-term, any kind of long-term effects associated with the vaccine, just because that typically isn't what happens with other vaccines. But
your body sheds it after 72 hours. Is that correct? The RNA in the vaccine is actually shed out of your system.
Right. Exactly. So the RNA, for two of the vaccines, the Pfizer vaccine as well as the Moderna vaccine, have this kind of coating molecule, and that gets shed very quickly. So it doesn't exist in your body, but it does produce this like protein, which is on the virus, and so your body creates antibodies to that. And this is a technology, it sounds like it's been developed so quickly, but I mean, the underlying technology has been, you know, in study and in preparation for years and years and years using different kinds of applications. So it's not that it's super rushed, it's just that once there was this new virus, the scientists knew what to do to create different kinds of vaccines which would probably be effective. And there's so many different kinds of vaccine technologies which have been used for different kind of illnesses for a long time. They just took that technology to apply it for this new virus, which just showed up almost a year ago.
Coronavirus is not even new, right? I mean, this is COVID-19.
Right, exactly. Well, the 19 is because it was first identified in 2019. But there's, yes, it was because, yeah, it seems like it should be Corona 20, but it was actually first identified in Wuhan in 2019, in December 2019, but there's about six other strains of coronavirus, three of which are like the common cold, and then there's, I don't know if you've ever heard of the SARS outbreak.
Oh, heck yeah. SARS,
yes.
Yeah.
So that's why we know so much about coronaviruses. And then there was something called the MERS outbreak.
Yeah,
that was
so-called.
Yeah,
and most people still have long-term side effects, don't they?
It wasn't that long ago. It was maybe four or five years ago. It wasn't that long ago.
Well, crap! I thought it was a long time ago. So,
but
I'm getting really old, Katrina.
Hate that. Yeah. Well, look, we appreciate all the information that you give us. We're going to go on a quick break, and we're going to come back and ask you a few more questions if you don't mind.
Absolutely, I'll be here.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you both so much.
Have you tried yoni steaming, aka V-steaming? And first, what is a yoni? Well, a yoni is our womb, our sacred place. And yoni steaming is where we sit over a hot pot of steeping herbs.
At the Sweet Kitty, we offer several herb blends that is fit for every woman. Some of the benefits of steaming is it's a detoxifier. It balances our hormones and it cleanses us. It tightens our vagina, reduces cramping, bloating, and regulates menstrual cycles. It increases fertility, reduces inflammation, fights unhealthy bacteria, and heals wounds. And last but not least, it leaves us feeling sexy as hell.
Always wearing them glasses. You don't wanna let no sucker look you in your eyes, huh? Better show them eyelashes. You love what you do with a passion. Ooh, that shit attract. I fuck with you, girl.
All you wanna do is gas me. How we end up in the backseat? Just tryna get to the bag. We on the same page, you the same way. Only keep the fam around me. Let me know what it's gonna be. I don't plan on getting no sleep. While we doing our thing, moving too fast. Candy paint with the windows all black. Seats creme brulee. What they gonna say? With the top down screaming money, anything. We up till 6 in the morning. When the sunrise, we'll be on it. Who I got five? We all so live. Tell me when to go, baby. When we gon' slide, baby. When we gon' slide. Hey. Up all night, baby, when we gon' slide? Oh, yeah, yeah. Baby, when we gon' slide? Slide. I don't care if we on a run. Nothing matters when we one-on-one. Looking at us cause we going dumb. We on the same wave, you the same way. You know I'll be down if it's with you. Where we going, baby, what's the move? We should take a trip up to the moon. Get a room. Doing our thing, moving too fast. Candy paint with the windows all black. Seats creme brulee. What they gon' say? With the top down screaming money, anything. We up till 6 in the morning. When the sunrise, we'll be on it. Ooh, I got five, you know it's all live. Tell me when to go, baby, when we gon' slide. Baby, when we gon' slide, hey. Up all night, baby, when we gon' slide, hey. Up all night, baby, when we gon' slide, up all night, baby, when we gon' slide.
400, I need a vacation. I need my bitch in an apron. Booty all out cooking bacon. Orange juice and Ace, so we drinking. I only come out when the stars out. I'm on a mission, but we far out. The city talking with a large mouth. Yeah, they after the boy like Fallout.
400.
Drop it, give me 50, girl. Drop it, give me 50. You should slide with me, cause you be tripping when you miss me. You gon' hold me close and on your neck gon' be a hickey. I ain't gotta do too much, I know what get you sick. I ain't gotta know astrology, I know your vibe. Skip the foreplay, you don't let niggas fuck with your mind. I ain't giving out apologies when I'm behind. Fucking up the seats of the brand new ride.
Moving too fast. Candy paint with the windows all black. Seats creme brulee. What they gon' say? With the top down screaming money, anything. We up till 6 in the morning. When the sunrise, we'll be on it. Ooh, I got five, you know it's all live. Tell me when to go, baby, when we gon' slide. Baby, when we gon' slide. Up all night, baby, when we gon' slide. Hey, up all night, baby, when we gon' slide. Up all night, baby, when we gon' slide.
Fucking up the seats of the brand new ride.
So we have the Lights Out Fest, right? And we are in the Bay Area, All right. So you know, we're leaving the lights on tonight, but we are going to say yes on three, okay? Because we're in the Bay. One.
Sorry about that. We are back, you guys, and I do apologize back for that little moment of silence. We are joined back with Katrina Kretzinger, which is a very, very intelligent woman. She is an epidemiologist. She has a lot of knowledge on infectious diseases, and she is just great all in all. So if you have any questions, please do not be afraid to call in and ask her anything that you guys would want to know. She is an open book, and she has been great. But as we move on, we do have another question, and that question is, does the COVID vaccine have a chip? And if it does have a chip, what is the purpose?
So am I live again?
Yes, you are.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, so that is a super easy question, and the answer is nope, no chip, and there's no reason why there would be a chip in it. There's no chip in the vaccine. Absolutely not.
Excellent.
Wonderful. So our next question is, being that cancer has been here for years, how is it that finding a vaccination or creating a vaccination for COVID was so easy, yet so many people are dying from cancer and there's not a cure or anything that can stop you from getting cancer?
So, okay, so the first thing I will say is that COVID is an infectious disease, and cancer sometimes can be caused by infections, but it's not inherently an infectious disease. It's a manifestation sometimes, like cervical cancer is caused by human papillomavirus, for example. So vaccines don't cure the COVID. They don't cure anything. What they do is they help your immune system prevent that disease or that illness from taking root, but they don't really have much of an impact on the long-term effect of the, or the long-term clinical course. So for example, a vaccine, we have a very good vaccine against hepatitis B, which is one of the major causes of liver cancer. And liver cancer, particularly in the Western Pacific region, used to be a very, very prevalent disease. And the vaccine actually has been so effective at preventing hepatitis B that it's really caused a decrease in the rates of chronic hep B and the associated cancer from that. So the question is, why have we not made more progress across the board for cancer? I mean, there's 300 different kinds of cancer. It's not one disease. And some kinds of cancer we've made a huge amount of progress with in this amount of time. And then I'm sorry, I know I'm going on, but just the last thing I was going to say. So there has been a lot of progress made against cancer. But the other thing I was going to say, and I mentioned this earlier, is that so much of the technology and the medical inventions that went into creating these vaccines were developed over many, many years prior to COVID-19. And as I mentioned earlier, we knew that coronaviruses existed and that they were potentially the potential cause of an epidemic, for example, the SARS and the MERS. And so scientists were already starting to work on some of their essential characteristics. So the fact that the vaccines were made so quickly is not surprising. Sorry.
So what you're saying, there's already basically a blueprint laid out for, you know, for a vaccine, and they just followed the blueprint, and that's why they were able to come up with a COVID vaccine, what we believe was so quickly.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, because there's a technology in place to actually understand the exact structure of the virus pretty quickly, that was known in January a year ago. As soon as that was known, then these technologies had been kind of developed over some period of time. They just applied that to this particular kind of virus, and that was actually pretty quick. And then they had to go through the, as I mentioned, there's three stages of clinical trials. They had to go through the first phase, the second phase, and the third phase. And once that was done, it just so happened that they were effective. When they tested them out, they gave half of their the subjects who volunteered for the trials the vaccine. The other half didn't get it. And then they just measured the rates of severe COVID in the two populations. And it was been very fortunate that this is an infectious disease that seems to respond to vaccines, because some don't respond. Like, I worked with an HIV for a long time, and we haven't had any luck at all finding a vaccine that works against HIV. But wow. For COVID-19, it just so happens that their vaccines do seem to be effective against it.
Now, didn't you also work on, Katrina, didn't you work on the HPV vaccine?
Yes, HIV vaccines. I worked on HIV vaccines. Is that what you're asking?
No, I thought it was the HPV vaccine.
Oh, HPV. So I have not personally worked so much on HPV vaccine myself, but I will say that it's been rolled out not only in the United States, but globally. And it's, you know, there really is going to underpin our ambitions to eliminate cervical cancer globally. It's a very effective vaccine, and it's targeted against the kinds, the serogroups of human papillomavirus that are responsible for cervical cancer and also for genital and anal warts. So we're like very excited about the HPV vaccine as well. Cicely, you still there? Hello?
Off course, why these motherfuckers chill on the golf course? suicide cop. Tell the truth, cop, with that true alive cop. Are you fucking high, cop? Don't even try, cop. Ain't no motherfucking drugs up in my spot. All you find in my closet is a high top. And my motherfucking ticket to the skybox. Hold up, nigga. I'm a rider. Use a roller, yes, the controller. Make me mad, that's when I get swoller. The incredible Hulk is bipolar. Come out the cup, knock off the rust. Throw my hands up, so you still wanna bust. The Trojan horse is full of excessive force. When they try to get aggressive, niggas off the porch. Police showing out for the white cop. White police showing out for the red cop. Police showing out for the white cop. White police showing out for the red cop. Cop, where is your dignity? Where's your empathy? Where is your sympathy? Bad cop, where's your humanity? Good cop, is that just a fantasy? Hell on that nigga, snitch on that bitch. Truth be told, motherfuck the blue code. Fuck the po-po, acting like D-Bo. Already know, Cracker, let the brick go. Black Lives Matter, it's not shit chatter. Cause all they wanna do is scatter brain matter. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A nine is terrible in your face. Has a terrible fucking taste. The pen is a terrible fucking place. The kings all hate the fucking ace. The judge sabotaged my fucking case.
Racist motherfucker.
Black police showing out for the white cop. White police showing out for the white cop.